Welcome to our new podcast mini-series, Exploring Neurodiversity, which is co-produced by FE News and Cognosist. My name is Gavin O'Mara. I'm CEO and founder of FE News. This first episode is being kicked off by my co-host, Louise Krafowski, Head of Science at Cognosist. Louise, how are you?
I'm really good. Thank you, Gavin. How are you?
Yeah, really, really good. I'm really excited to be kicking off this series, actually. It's going to make such a difference and impact to learners, to teams, to leaders. I'm just really excited about it. So thank you for joining me with this whole journey through this. And this is the first one, everyone. This is the first episode in the series. This episode is titled Myth Busting. But in a way, it's all about removing barriers around neurodiversity. And our plan is to explore common myths or barriers for learners, for educators, but also for the teams and leaders as well. So what are the common things that are coming up all of the time, and how is a way forward? What's the solution? And I was thinking, first of all, let's maybe kick this off from an educator perspective, if that's all right with you, Louise.
Yes, of course.
First off, though, can we talk about data? Because Cognosist have got really interesting data. And I mean, how many learners have you taken through assessment now?
Just hit 100,000 learners that we've put through assessment. So that doesn't actually include all the tutors, the managers that we train as well. That's completely separate data. So this is purely learners, 100,000 learners.
And that's a massive data set. Do you know what I mean? And that's fantastic. And out of that data, how many learners are you identifying that have got a neurodiversity?
Yeah. Out of that data, we're identifying approximately 1 in 3. So roughly 30% of learners we're finding that are having additional learning needs.
That's a huge number. And I mean, this is why this podcast is so important, really, because we're just trying to help people to be able to support, you know, that 1 in 3. Because if you're an educator, by that data, you will have a learner that's got at least one, in fact, you'll have quite a few, that have got a neurodiversity exactly. Challenge. And, you know, this is how do you help, A, the learner, but B, yourself, and as a leader, how do you help your team and the learner? And this is where we're sort of coming from with this podcast mini-series, really. Also, with that data that you've been through, is that across all, if it's looking at sort of on the levels, you know, we don't want to put people in pigeonholes, but, you know, across all like levels, like sort of, you know, 2, 3, 7. Is there still, you know, high numbers of people that have got a neurodiversity when it goes to like 5, 6, 7?
Yeah, Gavin. So we did slice that data down into levels as well to give us a more detailed look. And interestingly, that reduces for higher level learners. So we're identifying 1 in 5. Levels 5, 6, and 7. So that's 20% of learners, which is still significant if you think about it. Particularly as these learners have gone through, you know, a lot of their education and possibly career and not been found to have a need at all. So yeah, we're identifying people sort of, you know, unmasking needs really at these levels.
Yeah, no, very, very. So, I mean, even if you've got a cohort of learners and you're dealing at level 7, you're still going to have 20% from that data set to be able to say, you know, there's going to be additional needs that you need to be thinking of.
Here, so. And Gavin, these learners at higher levels have likely developed their own coping strategies. And, you know, that's not an easy thing to do yourself without any support. You know, it's frustrating. You don't know what's going to work for you. You don't know how you really think and learn. But that makes it harder for these learners to actually be identified without a cognitive assessment. So, you know, looking at your class, for example, or your cohort, it's unlikely that you as an educator would be able to tell who has a learning need and who doesn't.
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. So can we sort of roll into this? Because I think there's a few things I'd like to cover, and I know we've chatted through a few things, pre-podcast and have come through the other series as well. And this is the first as a four-part series. But looking at this for an educator, educators struggle with time. So tutors, trainers, lecturers, endpoint assessors, anyone that is involved with delivery, struggle with time, you know, and now has been more than ever where, you've had to flip the learning with the pandemic, and then coming out of the pandemic, you've got to flip it again. You know, they're stretched for time by most educators. But what's really interesting, exactly what you said, is there's been loads of recent research that's highlighted the high number of learners that are leaving school with undiagnosed neurodiversity. I mean, you could just keep rattling off the reports, really. It's just, there's so many. So what things should educators be looking for and think, maybe this person has an undiagnosed neurodiversity? What are the sort of the flags, the sort of things that you see pre-assessment, really, to be able to say, this person probably should, we should look at this in a different way?
Yeah. Well, of course, the easiest way would be to have a cognitive assessment tool. That would be the easiest and quickest and most inclusive way to identify all learners that need it. However, if you don't have the benefit of that, you know, I would look for discrepancies in behaviour. So, for example, someone might be really sharp and articulate when they're answering verbal questions in the class, but perhaps their writing doesn't reflect that ability. You know, it's like you're looking at work from two separate people. So discrepancies, spikiness, really, in behaviour, that's what I'd say. Or like, maybe if someone is given time to produce a piece of work, then it's exceptional quality. But if they have to do something on the spot, maybe a bit of reading, they can't answer questions about it. So, you know, that would signify a processing need, that person would need a little bit more time to process new information. Communication as well, you know, like being asked questions on the spot. Some people can't, you know, some people would freeze if they're asked questions on the spot. Again, in writing, they might show better information and output. So it's just look for the discrepancies and look for the spikes in that person's behaviour.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you. It does make loads of sense as well. You know, you're sort of, it's like you said, if people don't have the benefit of being able to put someone through an assessment, or well, what should you be looking for otherwise? You know, and how do exactly. You sort of go from there? Like I was saying around time and educators being really stretched, is say an educator has got, well, they're going to have at least one neurodiverse learner in their cohort or in their class. You know, it's going to be between a third, maybe higher, and 20% as a minimum, according to the data sets. Some educators, though, may question if they have time to provide the additional support or evidence for their learners that have got, you know, neurodiversity. What suggestions have you got as a way forward for both an educator, but also leaders, to actually enable educators to have time to support their learners?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. You know, completely understand the time issue. However, so the way I view support is it shouldn't be additional. It should be part of your professional best practice. And, you know, I've communicated, trained thousands of people in this sector. And I know for sure, like, that is best practice. People care about getting their learners through the program, whatever it takes. Now, that's probably why there's a lot of time discrepancy here, because that extra time has to be provided to get your learners through. However, if you instill strategies and coping mechanisms for the learners who have additional needs, then in time, they will be able to learn more independently, and they become more rounded, more disciplined themselves. So early work at the beginning will reap rewards towards the end, rather than, you know, pushing through with everybody in the same sort of way. That trial and error to discover how somebody thinks and learns is what takes the most time. Again, you know, going back to cognitive assessment, that enables you to do it quickly. Without that, you have to figure it out with your learner, and it doesn't always work out. So, you know, I've got an example, a real life example of a maths tutor, and he was teaching a class some maths, and there was one learner who got it in the class, but then couldn't apply it afterwards. So this particular maths tutor was spending, he was telling me, every 2 days, he was meeting him online, this was before the pandemic, to go over the same information with him again and again and again, because it just didn't stick. Eventually, the learner dropped out of the course, sadly. The tutor was saddened, frustrated. He went through the training with me, and then he said, well, it's blatantly obvious now what the issue was. The learner obviously had a difficulty with retaining verbal information. So at the time, he got it, but he couldn't remember what I was telling him afterwards. So instead of regurgitating the same information over and over again, what I should have done was find different ways to present it to him. And that's the thing, you know, that tutor was putting in hundreds of extra hours for that learner and it still didn't work. So it's about understanding your learner early on.
Yeah, that definitely.
I was going to talk about what leaders can do as well.
Yeah, that'd be really, really good. Because I was going to say, like, how do we then enable, you know, if you're looking from a leader perspective, you know, you're looking at your cohorts and you're thinking you're divvying up your time, but it's sort of making it noughts and ones. How do you make it so as it's you're giving people time to make impact?
So, I mean, yeah, we have got learner support funding available to support organisations with this sort of thing. If there's extra time being spent with learners or extra teams or extra members that are needed in teams, then that funding can help support that. Training of tutors is really important. Upskilling your teams to understand and spot and how to support learners is really crucial because that will save time. But I think in terms of management, it's really important to factor this into one-to-ones with your team members because you need to be looking at how many individuals are actually accessing additional support. So in a cohort of, say, 45 learners, we predict that 9 will have a hidden learning need. Okay. Now that should be an average. You know, that's manageable. Any more than that, and you need to be rejigging those learners to, you know, across your team so it's fair and it's manageable.
Yeah, that definitely. That makes loads of sense. Thinking about your maths tutor example sort of leads me to my next sort of question, really, around is solutions again for tailoring delivery. So, like you said, that maths tutor was putting in loads of extra time, but it just wasn't sticking. And it's how do we help educators to tailor delivery? Because I mean, there's going to be some people that say, I just don't have time to do that. So how do we overcome that? You know, how do we help from an educator and a leader perspective, the way forward around tailoring delivery to create impact for individuals?
So the best way to do this is to be fully inclusive for every single person. So a great teaching session could include, you know, various media. So, you know, bring in a bit of reading, bring in a bit of audio, bring in, you know, a bit of music, mind mapping, role playing, practical, like a good teaching session mixes all of those things together because it's transmitting information in different ways that's going to suit all senses. So that is being fully inclusive. You know, the old school way of, you know, just writing on the blackboard with no speaking, you know, it doesn't work. It doesn't, one size does not fit all in education. So we need to be fully inclusive. Think of all the senses when you're planning your teaching delivery.
Yeah, that's really cool. From a leader perspective, if I suppose that's a CPD issue, if you've got like someone who's being a bit old school, is sort of how do you, you know, spot that? How do you then sort of enable, you know, different educators to have that full suite, I suppose, really, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely training. And just, you know, even a basic understanding of how different teaching methods suit different senses. Observations, you know, pop in, see what's going on. Have group best practice sharing sessions. You know, especially with remote delivery now, you know, this is a new thing for a lot of educators. There's so much we can do with remote teaching and remote training. You know, it's not just talking through a screen anymore. You can bring in the use of colours. You can bring in the use of, you know, shapes, like actual drawing on the screen as it's happening. All of these things need to be incorporated and shared. Talk to learners as well. You know, what's working for you? What's not working for you?
Yeah, no, definitely. No, definitely. Can we talk about teams? Because sometimes when it comes to neurodiversity or SEND, mm-hmm. this can sometimes fall on the shoulders of maybe just one person or a really small team. if it's a part of a much larger provider or a larger college. But that's got its challenges. Yeah, you can have Teflon shoulder syndrome or hot potato syndrome, which, you know, pass that on really quick.
Pass it on.
Yeah, yeah. Or but how can we stop learners falling through the gaps? And, you know, it's basically, we don't want any learner to be left behind. So how can we avoid that? If you're in a larger organisation and you've got dedicated learner support, that all seems great on paper, but how can you make sure that it is great and the people don't just fall through the gaps?
It needs to be collective effort, Gavin. So, you know, if your provision is lucky enough to have a specialist team, that's fantastic. But, you know, it's not only their job to support learners. It's we all have a desire to do that. Additional support, inclusive support just needs to be, you know, our blood within this sector. We need to be doing this for every single learner, whether they have a need or not. So don't just throw things to your learning support team. You know, make sure that you're taking account of, you know, best practice, inclusivity, bringing your SEND learners to the forefront as well.
And I suppose it also goes not just with delivery, but also evidencing as well. If you're talking about additional learner support funding, for example, it's also then not the same as there's an MIS team or there's an admin team. That ain't my problem type of thing. It's the same thing again, I suppose, isn't it?
It's exactly the same. And Ofsted will be looking for that, you know, within in delivery. Like since the launch of the EIS, you know, SEND and high needs learners feature really highly in the framework. So you need to be including everybody in your teaching delivery.
Yeah, no, that's really good. So, and we've got this covered in a future podcast, but EIF, Education Inspection Framework, for anyone to check out a future podcast that'll be on there. This we're deep diving into that, which is a bit of a hint if you're into Ofsted. Sometimes people can, it's, and I can understand why, but people can be a little bit like, ah, some people can't get that, or some people just are not going to learn that for whatever reason. It gets a bit defeatist. So what's your view around that? Because I can understand why people do that, but at the same time, it's a bit sort of whitewashing it a bit. Do you know what I mean? Like trying to, you know, papering over the cracks and all this sort of stuff. How do we sort of not look for problems, but at the same time, you know, look to support everyone?
Yeah, I hear it all the time, not just from learners, but adults as well, you know, my brain just doesn't do maths. Well, that's nonsense, isn't it? It's, you know, something happened along the way when you were being taught maths. Either you missed out a chunk of information, because that's what it is with maths, isn't it? Like, you know, you're putting together building blocks of information to then build from. What you really need to do, if someone is struggling with a subject, is get to the bottom of why. Like, there's going to be a reason and you need to unpick that reason. Explain the information in different ways until you hit a good point. You're going to have a breakthrough at some point. So, you know, I worked with a learner many years ago who identified in numeracy. So if you identify numeracy, you struggle to process mathematical information. So in his case, it was operator symbols. Right. So if I use a very basic example, if I say to him, what's one add one? Didn't mean anything to him. So I tried, what's one plus one? What's one and one? You know, physically showed him, put two objects together, and it finally broke through. And then when you have that breakthrough, you run with it, you build on it. You know, your job as an educator is to instill confidence in your learner. And it's easy if they get the subject and they're flying, you know, it's a completely different one. If they hate the subject, they think they can't do it, they're being defeatist about it. So instilling confidence and belief in that learner is half the battle. And then, yeah, just try and find a breakthrough by putting information to them in different ways until they are able to process it.
Yeah, no, cool. Can we talk about learning styles? Because this is a hot topic and gets people go wild. Do you know what I mean? It's just, I've never seen a topic that can do such a thing. It's just, it really makes me laugh. So can we take it from your perspective? So learning styles, what's your view around that? And maybe explain the theory of learning styles? Because I know it's across the pond in the States is something which is taught a lot, is around learning styles. It sort of drifted in from different people around sort of commercial training as well. But what's your view on learning styles?
So learning styles, essentially, the theory is that we have a preference to learn in one certain way. So that could be visual, it could be auditory, or it could be kinesthetic, which is practical learning. Now, there's a bit of a fight going on between educators and then cognitive scientists, because it's a nice idea, isn't it? Like, I am a visual person, so give me information in diagrams, pictures, shapes, photographs, and that's my thing. It's all well and good, but our brains are hugely complex. We've got many, many, many different types of processing pathways. You need to look at your brain as a holistic thing, okay? So you can't just present information in one way. We're complex individuals. We're complex beings. People have different abilities, different talents, different goals, life experiences, and motivations. So, one might have better working memory. One might have better persistence. One might be more resilient, for example. So when you think about even just those things, how can you then say, okay, well, just give me information in a diagram format? Like the whole brain, the whole cognitive processing pathways has to come together. The primary focus should be on identifying and introducing experiences, activities, and challenges that enhance everybody's learning. So educators need to individualize teaching as much as possible, teach important things in different ways, like we just said. You can use stories, for example. You can use diagrams. You can use role-playing, but not just one modality. That just won't work.
Yeah, I suppose this is then making light of it, really. But, like, if you're on a – we can travel again and you're on a ferry and it's sort of on fire, then, if someone – the bell's going off but you ain't got a diagram, then you're like, no, I can't deal with that. I'm just gonna, give me a diagram, then I'll move. It's just, like, weird, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
We need to be looking – sorry, Gavin.
Yeah, go on, Lee.
What we need to be looking at is – where people struggle. So, respect to their strengths, we need to be looking at how to better the areas of need. So we need to be instilling structures, frameworks, support strategies to help raise their game in those things as a holistic path.
Yeah, no, very, very much. Can we talk about learners? Because we've covered educators, and like the majority of the audience on FE News are educators and leaders. But at the end of the day, everyone's there for the learner. So how can we then maybe give some tips and advice to educators where they're maybe hearing certain things from learners, or how do we instill that, like you said, confidence in the learner, really? Looking around the neurodiversity, there's a lot of people that are undiagnosed. And like you said, they could be getting to level 7. So that would mean they've gone all the way through school, they've gone through, FE, traditional FE to, let's say, level 3, then it goes into the missing middle. Then we're going into higher, and to have got there must be super deep stressful to have, to have either hidden that or to, to just, like you said, try to work out coping mechanisms. But sometimes there's going to be things like, I've sort of thought of this around learner reluctance, really. So, some learners may feel, it's a bit like what we were saying about the educators, about them having additional time to support their learning. What would you sort of suggest as a way forward for an educator if they're having a reluctant learner, or maybe a learner saying, I've got, A levels of degree, I've got level 5, I'm like sort of, a senior leader. How do you sort of, if there's been an identified neurodiversity, how do you then deliver that in a way which you onboard them,
Yeah, this is really common, Gavin. We're not talking intelligence here. So we're not saying or questioning somebody's abilities. What we're saying is, if you have a neurodiversity, there is one or more areas of processing that you may struggle with. So to access support means we're telling you how you can solve that for yourself. So we're going to equip you with the knowledge and the tools that you need, not only to complete your program, you know, brilliantly, without the stress and additional anxiety and frustration that you may have been carrying up till this point, but we're also equipping you, for giving you the tools for the future. So we're supporting your progression. You will be able to sit in any situation, education or employment, and be able to cope with it.
Yeah, that's, and it's just a way forward for people, isn't it? This is this question, and I want this to, I'm trying to think how to word this properly. But I think it's just, we're being real here and we're trying to dispel myths. So I'm just going to come out with it, basically. You know, we've got, you know, COVID situation. Some people are going to have to pivot and change their careers. They've got to come back to education to do that. And there's going to be reluctance from some people because the old school way of dealing with neurodiversity wasn't the greatest. You know, you were sort of, you know, sometimes it was implied, other times it was out and out said, you know, you're stupid. And how do we sort of, for learners that have been through that, and it will probably hopefully be mainly people of a certain age, hopefully this still isn't happening for younger learners that are coming through now. But for learners of a certain age, how do you overcome, there's a lot of baggage with that, you know, around some people may have gone through a big chunk of their life feeling that they're stupid when they're not at all. How do you overcome that?
Yeah, this infuriates me, the fact that, you know, this is misinformation and it really affects people's abilities and confidence.
Yeah.
It's all about being able to explain to the learner that the way you think and learn differs from person to person. There's no perfect brain on this planet. There's no standard brain. There's no average brain. You know, you have your cognitive diversity. Your need is a superpower in a lot of ways because it helps you see the world differently to most, right? So when you get, I don't know, a meeting of people, say, around a table, you don't want them all to have the same brain because if you have a problem that you're solving, if you're all looking at it in the same way, it's never going to get solved, is it? Whereas if you vary the brains around that table, you see the problem from different angles. You've all got strengths. You've all got areas that you could be better at. Maybe some of you have a need. And that is the way forward. We need to be varying our thinking. We need to be mixing this up. So that's what you need to be saying to your learners. You know, you have a superpower. This is a brilliant thing. We just need to help you work with it so it doesn't worry you, so it doesn't cause you bother in any situation.
And you've been through, like, assessment of 100,000 plus learners, yeah, as an organization. You've been through so many and you've done it, you know, one-on-one, you've done it through, you know, through digital. Could you give some advice maybe to educators if they've sort of explained to someone that you've got a, you know, XYZ, you know, challenge and this is how we're going to overcome it, but there's emotion there. So maybe that learner's now in floods of tears. Maybe they're angry. Maybe they're just in a little bit of shock. Because there's lots of reasons why. What would you recommend as a way sort of forward if you've got a learner, or maybe it's after the fact they've had a little think about it and thought, well, hang on, I'm dyslexic, or hang on, yeah, I've got executive function or whatever. What would you say is a way forward to better, you know, not just support that learner with education, but it's also like that whole emotional support that goes with this as well?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that initial conversation following an assessment result is absolutely crucial to the learning journey. It's essential that it is framed positively, that you use the right language, that you give the person space to process what they've just been told. You know, yeah, in a lot of cases, it's not a surprise to the learner. In fact, often it's a relief to find out that, oh, everything's clicked now. I get why I behave in this sort of way. But yeah, in those cases where maybe it's a shock or a surprise or unexpected, make sure you give that learner time to process that information and check back with them. And don't just, you know, have the conversation and, right, box ticked, my job's done, and off you go. You know, revisit, you know, maybe if they have had a bad reaction, give them a phone call 24 hours later just to check in with them again. Signpost them. You know, there's lots of good literature out there that is aimed at learners of different levels to explain this sort of thing. I find also it's good to signpost to, you know, brilliant people, brilliant leaders around the world in various sectors and appointments who have a neurodiversity. You know, talk about Richard Branson, for example, Alan Sugar, Whoopi Goldberg, Tom Cruise. You know, their neurodiversity hasn't held them back in any way. So it's about that. It's about showing the learner you can achieve anything you want to with the right tools and the right mindset.
Yeah, that's really helpful. You know, I think you're really right around signposting to people that everyone would know. Do you know what I mean? And they can sort of like, oh, okay, I'm a Richard Branson. Yeah, exactly. Do you know what I mean? Or I'm a Billie Eilish. Woo, type of thing. And it's just, yeah, exactly. I think that's a really clever move, actually. I really like that.
You know, Gavin, the more these people come forward and are open about their neurodiversity, the more normal the conversation is. And that's where we need to be aiming.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's totally. I suppose it sort of leads into our next question a little bit, really, is like coping mechanisms that people have brought in that have, they've got baggage with what they've sort of had to sort of deal with. And there could be some which are, you know, in a little bit in denial. There's others that are in, you know, sort of defense mode as well. But if you've got like a denial sort of mechanism in place from a learner, like, yeah, my brain just doesn't get maths, or I can't spell, or my brain don't work like that. What, you know, and that's just like literally in a way, a bit of an excuse as well, not to put in. So it's another way of sort of doing it's the passive aggressive way of saying, I'm not going to do that additional work, isn't it, really? So how do you, as an educator or as a leader that's got that challenge off of a learner, overcome that? It's about to help them to sort of take things forward themselves, to take ownership themselves, and to then be able to progress.
Yeah, so I mean, I would spend one-on-one time with a learner like that initially. Having that sort of behaviour in a class situation could be quite disruptive, and could affect the other students. So in a one-to-one session, initially, I would just start by talking, just try and get to the bottom of why they feel the way they do. You know, have they had a really bad experience at school with one of their teachers? Were they bullied because of it? You know, it could be anything. So get to the bottom of that. When you get to the bottom of that, you can start building confidence. Exploring different ways of learning. So, you know, BBC Bite Size, for example, have great, really short videos that teach things in different ways. So try that with the learner, but don't just send them off to do it as homework. Do it with them. And at the point they don't understand something, ask them to stop here and we work through it together. That team work really helps in situations like this. Try different methods, try different avenues, try different media. Pair work could work really well as well. So if you've got two students who are struggling in the same area, put them together to work. You know, they may have different tips, different strategies they can share with each other.
Yeah, no, but, definitely.
Yeah, ultimately it's about building that confidence up.
This is sort of going to lead to my next question, which I sort of was going to ask earlier, but it seems right to do it now, is you've got a cohort of learners and it's in a classroom. Those were the days when you could actually be in a classroom and all this sort of stuff. And you have got some learners that have identified as neurodiverse. How do you make sure you're tailoring learning for the learner, but also not embarrassing them by making it be like, you know, now we're going to do this and sort of be a little bit, you know, stank? Because there's a tactic that some educators do to it's a reluctance thing to make it sort of stand out for other people. How do we sort of make it so it's inclusive, but it doesn't then make people feel embarrassed and it flips the other way?
Well, Gavin, as I said before, you know, we all have strengths in our thinking and we all struggle with some things. Like, there's no perfect brain. So this one size fits all doesn't work. I'm going to say it. The way to be fully inclusive, and this is whether you've got a need or not, is to just have good teaching practice. So, for example, you could bring in strategies such as stick to the same routine. So everybody in that class knows that you're going to have a 5-minute warm-up session, then you're going to have your intro, you're going to go through the previous session, and then you're going to have a conclusion. So that framework is going to work for everyone. Chunk information down. That works for everyone. You know, no brain can take on loads and loads of overwhelming information. Like, you're just, you know, flustered when that happens. Send information through. prior to the class. So send your handouts through, send any pre-reading through so people can read in the time they need. So everybody comes to that class ready. Use colours, use numbers, use bullet points, recap, repeat. These are very basic strategies and they work for every single brain.
And looking at sort of the way into the future, we've had the massive acceleration of education technology due to COVID. And I think, to be honest, that's one of the successes of COVID, which has been a terrible situation, but is accelerated the use of technology, which wasn't happened at this pace before. What do you see as a way forward to be able to help all learners with the use of technology? A bit like what you said with using colours, using different, recaps. How can we use technology moving forward to be able to help all learners?
I mean, I've got to say the sector has risen to the challenge of working remotely really quickly and really well. You know, I've presented at various conferences over the last, well, obviously online conferences over the last year, and it's been fantastic to hear the various strategies that are being employed. Little things, Gavin, like the ability to record a session. You know, it's such a simple technique, but it wasn't done in face-to-face teaching before, unless the learner did it themselves. So like, this is a blanket approach, right? You can record your session, send it out to all your learners. They can revisit it as many times as they need to. Polls, interactivity, word clouds, all of that is really, really easy teaching. You know, and it's a great way also of gauging how your learners are feeling. Other things, you can use things like interactivity. So, instead of in the classroom, you stood at the front of the class with, the marker, who's going to come and answer this question. Online, it's really quick and easy to all be contributing to an online interactive whiteboard session and sharing ideas that way. I think also, has been a prime opportunity to instill online behaviour etiquette in our learners. So without knowing that we're really doing it, switching your camera on, pausing when somebody else is talking, paying special attention to body language, non-verbal communications, gestures, that's even more important when we're communicating online. So all of that behaviour we've transmitted to our learners, so they've learned an extra skill during this pandemic that they can take forward with them.
Yeah, no, that's really, really helpful. Thank you. I'm saying that, and we're doing this over a video, and I'm nodding like crazy. But if you could bust one myth around neurodiversity, what would be the thing you would want to do? Because you live this, you've been, you're head of science and cognitivist, you've been living this, but you must have so many different things that you hear or see. What would be that one thing you'd want to just go, psh, and this, that's it, it's gone?
Well, there are many, actually. I'll just pick one, Gavin. I think the main one is when I hear it's not my job. Not my job. That really hurts my heart, because everybody thinks it should be somebody else's job sometimes. And in this case, it's not. It's really dangerous to think in that way. Yes, we have specialist teams. Yes, we have specialist teachers as well. But this needs to be lived and breathed by every single person that works with learners. That's the only way we can form well-rounded, confident, productive individuals that then go on into society.
Yeah, no. What are you up for? Give us your top three then, because I think there's that one around it, someone else's job, is really interesting, because it's that Teflon bit we're talking about again. But at the same time, I suppose there's also the flip, that there's that other person takes it all on, and it's like that maths tutor that you talk about earlier that does so many more hours. What do they need to do to be able to then ask for, I need some help here, I need some help to be able to make change, and also I need some life.
Exactly.
What would you recommend there?
Training. I'm going to plug shamelessly our masterclass. I can do that because it's free. We built that series for the sector to give everybody the ability to upskill themselves, even if like the organization doesn't. So go download it. You don't have to do all six sessions. You can do whatever you choose out of it, but upskill yourself. It's our job to do that for ourselves. We're learning every day. Things are changing every day, and we need to be upskilling ourselves in all sorts of avenues every day to support our learners better. And your learners will respect you for that. You know, if you're talking to them on their level and have an understanding and a genuine care for their abilities and progression, they're going to respect you and they're going to love hearing what you say to them.
Yeah, no, definitely. And we're in the education sector, yeah? We should be educating ourselves, surely. That's right. What we're meant to be doing, isn't it?
Exactly. So you want some more? You want a couple more?
I want two more of your bits because I'm there intrigued. I want to know. What the...
Two more. All right. High-level learners don't have learning needs. That's okay. a pet peeve of mine when I hear that. Like, we started this podcast by saying, our stat, you know, one in yeah. five, 20% of high-level learners are being identified through Cognosist, right? The amount of conversations I've had with people that say, well, there's no point me looking at a tool like Cognosist because none of our learners will identify with the need. And that could be because they're high-level or it could be because of the type of work they're in, okay? All right. They put their learners through the assessment. Yeah, roughly 20% were identifying. So don't dismiss a learner based on the level they're at or the type of subject they're studying. Anybody could have a neurodiversity.
Yeah, no, definitely. How do you overcome that? Because that's sort of, is that ignorance, arrogance, yeah. or just uneducated? You know, what's the way to get around that?
Communication, I think, you know, coming forward with stats like we are doing, yeah. to dispel these myths. You know, I spent a lot of years supporting disabled students in higher education, and a significant amount of those learners were being diagnosed with dyslexia at that high level, so midway through their degree. Now, as we said before, these learners didn't have a life. They didn't have a social life. They didn't have time to see their friends or family because all they did was work to reach that first class, same as their peers. But that shouldn't be the way. You know, those learners are likely to drop out due to frustration. Yeah. They are unlikely to ask for help because, you know, well, why would they? They can cope. They can do it. But that's a lot for a person to be taking through. So, yeah, communication. Widen the understanding. You know, we're all different. We all think differently. You know, there's certain things that people are going to struggle with, and we have to anticipate that with everybody.
Yeah, no, definitely. And your third?
My third one is to do with yellow-coloured overlays, right? Yellow-coloured overlays don't solve every problem with reading or writing. Right? The amount of neurodiverse learners who have come to me waving their yellow overlay saying, I don't know why I've been given this. Has anybody done a quality test with you? No, I've just got this yellow overlay and it does nothing for me. Right. That being said, right, in some cases that does work, yeah, for Erlen syndrome or some forms of dyslexia, but there has to be a test that goes with that, okay? Just throwing a yellow coloured overlay or in that also additional time at learners just willy-nilly just doesn't work. My point here is, you need to take your learners on a case-by-case basis, okay? Yeah. Just throwing sort of like blanket support at someone just doesn't work. It doesn't work like that. There's different forms of neurodiversity, different types of thinking, and you have to accommodate people individually.
Yeah, no, definitely. If you could give one tip to educators and leaders when they're thinking about neurodiversity, what would it be?
Be inclusive. This isn't a bad thing. This is a good thing. It's a superpower. It's important to have different thinkers in your organization. It's important to elevate people who are struggling as well. So instill confidence in every single one of your learners. We are all neurodiverse. We are all cognitively diverse. And it's a really important thing.
Yeah, no, definitely. And what would you also say? Same thing again, really. A top tip for learners around neurodiversity, if diagnosed or not, what would you say would be a good thing for them to be thinking about?
Believe in yourself. You can make huge strides in society having this superpower. If, you know, for example, teachers with a cognitive difficulty make the absolute best teachers because they have that understanding of how hard it is to go through school undiagnosed and struggle and be told bad things about yourself. They can spot those pupils in a class really easily because they've been there. Believe in yourself. You can achieve whatever you want to with the right help, with the right support and the right confidence in yourself. For those learners who are don't have a need, you know, work with your strengths, but you will also have weaknesses. Just because you don't have a need doesn't mean that, like, there are things that you're not bad at. There are. Don't ignore them. Grasp them. You know, find ways around them. Don't ignore it. So if you're a bit bad at reading, don't just ignore reading. Keep reading until you get better at it. That's my advice.
Louise, that's been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for kicking off this this podcast series, Exploring Neurodiversity. There are four parts to this series. So I hope you join us because Louise is the co-host with me on the other three. And I hope you enjoyed today. I hope it was helpful. The idea for today was to just literally be able to really shine a light on some of the stuff, which is sometimes a bit hidden, and to be able to then help you and your learners to be able to progress and to be the very best they can be. So thank you, Louise, for kicking that off today. And we look forward to speaking to you very soon in Exploring Neurodiversity.
Fabulous. Thanks, Gavin.
Thank you for joining me and Louise for the latest edition of Exploring Neurodiversity. This is actually one of a four-part mini-series. All of the episodes together are myth-busting, steps to outstanding, funding fears, and implementing inclusivity. So me and Louise will hopefully speak to you soon.